Welcome back to another episode of Northeastern Next. On today's episode, we have Megan Rita, a shareholder activist lawyer. We'll discuss how Northeastern inspired her to go to law school, her upcoming panel at Harvard, and her career advice for Northeastern students. Let's get into it. All right. Hi, Megan. How are you today? Thanks for joining me on the Northeastern Next podcast this afternoon.
Good, Tommy. I'm well, thank you. How are you?
Good. I'm doing well. It's really nice that we actually, I don't know if you're in Boston right now, but Boston is getting sun for the first time in a couple of weeks. So it's really nice to be able to soak it in and feel the city come alive again.
Yes, I'm in New York, but similarly very sunny today. I find myself putting back my winter coat, pulling out my spring jacket on a constant basis over these past several weeks. So I'm very happy for the summer weather today.
Yeah, right. It's nice that we have a little bit of consistency. You know, I mean, I'm sure I spoke it into existence. Now it's going to totally backfire on me.
It's going to snow tomorrow.
Is it actually? No, I'm kidding.
No.
We're in deep trouble.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you again for joining. So, you know, just to kind of start off, do you mind just giving us a little bit of background on your Northeastern experience? You know, what college you graduated from, what degree you have, you know, any specific fun memories that you might have from Northeastern?
Yeah, so I attended Northeastern in 2004. I majored in political science with a minor in journalism. Graduated in 2008. I didn't end up doing a co-op program mainly because I already knew that I wanted to be a lawyer. So adding another year on top of a three-year law degree wasn't really entertaining for me, let's say. And so what I did utilize is Northeastern's resources and employment opportunities that I did have available, work with the staff, and was able to do a few internships while I was there. The one really good benefit about Northeastern and one thing that really attracted me to it, even though I wasn't going to do a specific co-op program, was the vast resources it has and those connections it has inside and outside of Boston, and really focusing on developing me as a professional and entering the work field as a young professional, which you don't oftentimes learn solely in a classroom dynamic. So I interned, I took several interns. I think I'll talk about the one that was most memorable to me, which was working for the Boston City Councilor, who was John Tobin at the time. And his chief of staff was Dave Isberg. Come to find out, they're actually working at Northeastern. John is vice president, and I believe Dave is assistant vice president of the Office of City and Community Engagement. So kind of while I was preparing for this podcast, I had almost a full circle moment where people that I really benefited from following them and shadowing, you know, Councillor Tobin at that time, you know, and then having them be part of the Northeastern family now, you know, it kind of, you know, brought me back to being at Northeastern and really made me think about what I learned in that experience and how Northeastern, you know, kind of generates a community feeling and really has an openness like that. While I was there, I think I was there in 2006 for a couple of months. I shadowed Councillor Tobin, helped to draft some legislation, got to sit on hearings, a lot of research, and really just kind of learning the skills to be professional and an advocate for your constituents. And at the time, I didn't have a specific legal career I was, you know, looking at per se, and definitely not shareholder activism. But, you know, again, coming full circle, activism is kind of an advocacy for your constituents, right? Shareholders are advocating for their investors and trying to improve a company's governance and the like. So I kind of felt that there was a similarity there, and maybe, you know, I didn't even realize I was being pushed in that direction at the time. So yes, I had a great experience there. I loved working and the experience I gained as an intern at the Boston City Council. So I thank Northeastern for that opportunity. And then I would say I had the chance to study abroad in Australia. Again, something that I think Northeastern really gives ample opportunities for students to partake in, you know, broaden my perspective. I really had, you know, a cultural awareness and learned a lot by just being in a completely different environment and learning how to adapt to different circumstances and different lifestyles and the like. And that in and of itself prepared me, you know, to work in a world that's really globally connected. And especially in my fields, shareholder activism is a global practice area. A lot of our clients are US-based, but they target companies across the world. So I think just having that perspective and experience at Northeastern kind of assisted in my current career. So I don't know if you want me to keep going.
No, I mean, yeah, you can tell me as much as you'd like. I just think that it's really cool. You know, would you say that it's fair to say that these internships and these experiences were almost like, I don't know, for lack of a better word, catalyst in pushing you towards the area of legal work that you currently focus on?
Not directly, but I think indirectly.
Gotcha.
It was, I graduated from Northeastern in 2008, which was a rather, you know, it was kind of a financial crisis for several years. It was a bad economic downturn. So I went to law school at Fordham, and, you know, the opportunities that were typically available for students just really weren't there. It was kind of, you take what you get at the time. I lucked out and took the opportunity of a lifetime. I summered at Ulshan from Alaska, where I am now, while at Fordham Law School. And, you know, got a little bit involved on the activism side, which was kind of, you know, really becoming an increased and heightened practice area in the legal field, not so much before. And, you know, I dove right in, and I think indirectly, you know, my experience at the Boston City Council and kind of the advocacy side kind of propelled me to really kind of like the work that shareholder activism presented. And, you know, I kind of almost had a choice between staying in general corporate or pursuing IP and that type of legal field, which I initially thought I wanted to do. But then I really enjoyed this invigorating practice area. It's constantly changing. It's dynamic. It's challenging. And so, yeah, I do think, you know, part of my experiences at Northeastern, you know, pushed me towards this pathway.
Oh, that's really cool. Now, shareholder activism, you know, and I guess for my sake, and I'm sure a couple of viewers out there, do you mind maybe giving us just like a very, very boilerplate basic overview of what shareholder activism, I guess, means, especially like looking at it through a legal lens?
Yeah. So there's a lot of different activities that encompass shareholder activism, a lot of type of activist investors. But I would say, from its most basic form, you have an investor in a company, and, you know, the investor is utilizing its rights as a shareholder to effectuate or push for some type of change at the company, whether it's changes to the company's strategy, its operations, its governance, its investor communications, its ESG practices, a lot of different tools available, a lot of different strategies employed. But, you know, I would say a large degree of my clientele is hedge funds that are value driven. So they see a company, they invest in it, they think the market is not appropriately reflecting, or the shares aren't appropriately reflecting the value of the company. And so it thinks that there's things that can be done, whether it's changing the board of directors and management, because clearly they're not doing the right things to make the company perform, you know, getting rid of a certain line of business. Those are the types of things. So, you know, essentially a client will come to us, an investor, let us know, you know, the target company, and we'll kind of go through a fulsome analysis and provide a pathway of what they can and cannot do as a shareholder. What rights do they have? Can they nominate board directors? Mm-hmm. Can they call a special meeting? So we really provide a very fulsome analysis from the beginning of a client's investment. And sometimes they come to us later and after the fact, of course, those situations evolve. But it's really just, you know, helping a shareholder accomplish its main objective, whatever that be. And usually it's driving value, increasing performance, increasing the value of its shares. And a lot of this, in turn, you know, it involves a lot of a company's corporate governance features and what tools that a shareholder can use to kind of accomplish its goals.
Oh, okay. That's okay. That's really cool.
Do you want a point of reference? Have you seen many people tend to point to shows like Billions or Succession?
See, that's so funny you bring that up, because as you were answering in my head, I was thinking to myself, is it appropriate to reference a TV show right now? And my first frame of reference was, actually, believe it or not, I don't know if you've seen Silicon Valley, but
yes,
kind of similar stuff happened. I just finished it. That's why it's like at the forefront of my mind right now. But yeah, Succession was the other show that jumped out to me. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, I kind of, you know, for those that might not really understand the concept generally, which, you know, it's not relatively new, but I would say it's more widespread and well known now. You know, it's like take the concept of those shows and what's happening, but dial it down a notch and understand that it's a lot more complex and you know, the landscape is a lot more diverse than maybe what those shows portray. But yes, do we end up in public proxy contests battling for, you know, seats on a company's board and in press releases and letters going back and forth and all that exciting work? Yes, that certainly happens. In the end, it's what we do for our client. That's kind of usually the last ditch effort to get what needs to be done, where they're forced to kind of play the hand and nominate and run this full proxy contest. And in those instances, I find myself wearing multiple hats. I'm a campaign manager, I'm a legal advisor, I'm a strategic advisor. So, you know, it keeps me, you know, I think what I do is challenging, and that you have to be, you know, aware of a lot of different implications, a lot of different aspects of the law, and just strategically it encompasses a lot more than people might think. But in the end, you know, my goal is always to try to find the, you know, the best pathway to accomplish my client's goal. And usually it's some form of change to a, you know, a company's board of directors or the like. And and before we get to those public proxy contests, there's a lot of behind the scenes works that people aren't really aware of, negotiating with a company and trying to resolve. I mean, settling, you know, I probably have done more settlements than I have proxy contests of recent dates. So.
Gotcha. Yeah, I can imagine that. You know, I mean, again, like you mentioned, my frame of reference is television, which obviously we both know isn't real. But it, I can imagine that just how much goes into it in the back end before it even gets to, like you said, it gets to a proxy contest.
Yeah.
So it's my understanding, too, that relatively soon you're going to be participating in a panel at Harvard. Do you mind telling us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I'm excited about it too. I am excited to visit my old stomping grounds. I am absolutely going to be stopping by Northeastern, but no. More importantly, I'm excited to really participate in this prestigious event. It's a forum on or a roundtable to discuss current issues addressing corporate governance, and it involves a number of parties. There's corporations and their advisors, including counsel, proxy solicitors, PR firms, and practitioners and experts in our field. It's a lot of knowledgeable individuals and industry leaders that participate in kind of discussions that, you know, are intended to make to encourage policy changes and just discussions around corporate governance and the trending topics. I don't know the specific agenda for the roundtable for June yet, but I imagine it will kind of focus on a lot of the corporate governance trends we've seen, you know, including ESG related issues, environmental, social, and governance, in case I'm using a term that's very familiar in my field. ESG is environmental, social, governance, but ESG related issues, executive compensation, legal issues, the SEC, which is the Securities and Exchange Commission, where a lot of our clients have to make routine filings. You know, they recently enacted what's called a universal proxy rule, which we don't have to go into the details about, but it was substantial in that it impacts both corporations and their investors alike. And this is now the second year into the new regime. So I expect some discussion on that. There's been a recent Delaware court decision, MOLIS, that is now on appeal that has substantially impacted. And it came out just before the beginning of our proxy season, or at the very beginning, and it substantially impacts settlement agreements for our clients, for both the company and the investors. And it's been a challenging season because of that, and having to navigate that, you know, uncertain law and how, you know, it can impact our clients, even though I personally think the facts are very distinguishable. But without getting into the details of that, I expect some discussion on that at the roundtable, and just kind of really learning from my colleagues and people really knowledgeable in my field, and kind of get their scope on the state of the law and the current trends impacting corporate governance.
Wow, that sounds really, really interesting. That's really cool. So is this something that can be live streamed anywhere? If like somebody listening to the podcast wants to check it out, or is this something kind of maybe a little more behind the scenes?
I don't think it's live, but they do publish the agenda and kind of go into detail about the speakers and the like. All that isn't up there. I can get you further detail after if I find out that any of the actual discussions will be public. But I think, you know, that's more of an internal process.
Okay, gotcha. Still, that sounds like an amazing opportunity. And like you said, I'm sure it'll be nice to be back in Boston. And this is happening in June.
In June.
Great time to be back in Boston, that's for sure.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
That's awesome. So I guess my next question for you is to kind of maybe bring it back a little bit towards Northeastern. You know, earlier we talked about your Northeastern experience and how you really cherished the experiences and the internships and everything. And, you know, would it be fair to say that you kind of had an idea when you were going into Northeastern that you were heading to law school? Or is that something that maybe developed over time as you continued your undergraduate career?
I think I had a good idea going into Northeastern that I wanted to go to law school. But what I think Northeastern did for me that maybe I wouldn't have had the opportunity in another type of college that doesn't really have a focus on kind of the work aspect, it is learning more of the professional day-to-day skills that you need to survive in our very competitive world. Just, you know, we're talking basic communication skills, how to be a professional, how to present yourself, how to communicate, and you know, those critical analytical thinking skills that you don't necessarily get in a classroom environment. So I think that kind of, you know, made me feel more comfortable and confident going into the legal field, in a field that's very competitive and is very communication based. And really, it doesn't really matter going to law school what you study. It, you go in and you, it's based on experience in real world. I mean, I can't emphasize that. I'm not sure. So what I'm saying is that just working and the curriculum that's very learning, you know, applied learning based generally at Northeastern, just I think helped me propel as a professional in my legal career that is really heavily dependent on real life skills.
Yeah, I can imagine, you know, Northeastern really touts on experiential learning being sort of a foundational piece of the Northeastern experience. So, you know, to use your phrase, those analytical and critical thinking skills, I can't even imagine carrying those over into law school and then really just compounding them before you even get into the real world. I bet that was a really great experience. That's awesome.
So, yeah.
That being said, do you have any advice for Northeastern students that are looking to attend law school?
So I would say utilize all the resources Northeastern offers. I think I can't overemphasize that there are so many opportunities to get your feet wet in the real world and to really hone in on those skills that are really more important sometimes than learning some of the academics that may have, you know, no relevance on your on your future career. Utilize the resources, study abroad, go out there and you know, if you're not going to do a co-op program, fine. You know, I did quite well without a co-op program. Undertake internships. You know, I really, it's the contacts, and I actually didn't stress this before, but even the contacts, the professional contacts and peers that you make by working during your, you know, your college career, you know, they're invaluable and you won't have that opportunity again. So I would just say utilize everything you have, you know, and make sure it's a pathway that, you know, you ultimately want to pursue in the end. It is very challenging and it requires a lot of hard work. So just, you know, keep up the good work, stay determined and, you know, really get, you know, really hone in on those professional skills so that you can enter the workforce, you know, kind of at an elevated level than some of your peers that didn't have those type of opportunities available to them.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that's a piece of advice that really will resonate with Northeastern students, because a lot of our listeners, you know, while we are a podcast that focuses on alumni stories and the impact that Northeastern had on them as undergraduate students, I do know that there are Northeastern undergraduate students who are thinking to themselves, hey, what am I going to be able to do with a Northeastern degree? Because it is, at the end of the day, such a unique experience. It's not an experience you're going to find at any other undergraduate school in America. And I think it's really cool that we're getting so many perspectives, especially a perspective from someone in a career like yourself, where you went to law school, because that is, at the end of the day, I think a relatively, I don't know if common's the right word, but You know, I think it's really awesome that you're able to be the, I don't know, ambassador. You know, that's
Yeah, I
awesome.
mean, when I started at Northeastern, did I, think I would find myself, as one of the top attorneys in this practice area, globally? No, and I think part of being a successful person in any career path, including the law, is just, continue to work hard, drive, make mistakes, learn from your mistakes, and nothing is unattainable. I wouldn't have been able, I wouldn't have said I'm going to be a top attorney in my field, in 2004. And I think that can't be emphasized enough. Have faith in your work, do the work, and you'll propel.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, speaking of that, you know, it's my understanding too, you were recently named a partner, right? Is that
Yeah,
fair?
I've been a partner for a few years, but I
Oh, okay.
actually, no, it's fine. But I propelled at a very fast pace. I became a partner, I think 7 years after becoming a 7 or 8 years after becoming an associate, which is a pretty fast pathway. So I was able to rise the ranks relatively quickly. And I think a lot of it is from, the professional experiences I had as a younger professional and as a college student. I thank Northeastern and my own colleagues at my own firm for kind of, shaping me into that type of person.
That's awesome. Well, you know, congratulations. You know, I know we just met, but I would feel like I'd be remiss if I didn't congratulate you on that because that is still like, that's a great honor. That's awesome. So now I do want to turn the tables a little bit onto you, if that's all right.
Sure.
So you just gave great advice to Northeastern students, but what would you say is the best career advice that you've ever gotten?
That is a very good question. From any at any point in my life or while at Northeastern.
Any point in your life.
Yeah. So something interesting that's resonated with me more recently as I got older that my dad told me when I was younger is you don't, I mean, you create your own pathway. And actually, the exact phrase was you create your own luck. And when you hear that, you're like, create your own luck. Okay, but what does that really mean? And how is that even relevant to your career? And I think it just really resonated with me in that it's in any situation you're in, the choices you make will have an impact on your future. And everyone has challenges. The world is crazy. We can't anticipate everything. There are situations outside of our control, but you need to remain focused, stay driven, and you'll get where you need to be if you take the steps and you have the drive to do so. So, it's just something that, I never really thought of it until more recently that, it's really a true statement. You create your own luck because you create your pathway. And even if situations throw you awry, you just got to stay focused and stay determined.
Yeah.
And then something else, just if I can add, as a woman, particularly entering a practice that was largely male dominated, and in particular my practice area, glad to say the tides are definitely turning. But initially, I was a little hesitant, kind of entering that type of environment where my voice might not be heard as much. And so one piece of advice that really stuck with me was to always exert confidence and stop apologizing.
That's
I think
great.
it's in my nature or in, a lot of women's nature to be kind of kind-hearted and, apologetic. And I was, and I am at times, but I really learned like that's not the way to propel your, you want to show what you're talking about. Exert confidence, and there's no reason to apologize. You just, you're doing great, and keep up the good work.
That's awesome. Yeah, absolutely. I think that's really great career advice. And I think, again, I think that really is going to resonate. And I think that's going to stick with a lot of our listeners. So thank you so much for answering that. Now, since this is the Northeastern Next podcast, I always have to ask our guest at the end, what is next for you, Megan?
Good question. So I'm trying. I have a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old at home. So I didn't take a break in my legal career, let's say. But I now that I'm out of diapers, I think I have more time to, more closely focus on increasing my legal career and making strides. And I think starting with things of this nature, doing podcasts, doing conferences, speaking engagements, I'm trying to get out there more as a professional and a thought leader in my practice area. And so I can kind of, you know, that's kind of where I'm seeing myself down the road, is becoming more of a leader in my firm by taking on, you know, more active leadership roles, and to also become a thought leader in my specific practice area by engaging, you know, in more public speaking situations and the like.
That's awesome. Well, hey, thank you for choosing this podcast to be one of your platforms. You know, I appreciate it for
thank
sure.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, well, that's awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining again, Megan. This was a lot of fun. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me.
No problem. And I really can't wait to be back there in June. It's just one Northeastern, like, it gave the best collegial environment in a vibrant city vibe. And I'm an avid sports fan. So it's an amazing city, and I'm excited to visit. Actually, the Patriots won a Super Bowl while I was in college, and the Red Sox won a World Series. So, I mean, the energy that city exerts, it's fascinating.
It
ended up in New York because of family and other reasons, but Boston has my heart.
Oh, that's awesome. I mean, you're going to be in a great time too, because hopefully the Bruins and the Celtics will be sticking around by June time.
Although I'm an avid New York Rangers fan, so.
Ooh. Then I might have to cut that part. I'm kidding.
So this was great. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Northeastern Next. Are you or do you know a Northeastern alum with a great story to tell? If so, email us at alumni@northeastern.edu to be featured on a future episode of the pod. I hope you enjoyed the episode, and I'll see you the week after next.